The following program contains views and opinions that do not necessarily reflect those of KMRE staff or of the Spark Museum of Electrical Invention.
It's Cascadia News Now on KMRE, KAVZ, and KMRE.org. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and my co-hosts are Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham. Tonight, we're joined by Marie Marchand and Laurie Maxwell of NAMI. Whatcom, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have a lot to talk about in terms of mental health in the state, nationally, how it affects people in Bellingham. But let's start off by getting to know you folks a little bit. Laurie, why don't you tell me who you are and how you got connected with NAMI?
So my name's Laurie Maxwell, and I wanted a place to volunteer in the community. And I live with a mental health condition, so I wanted to be able to give back to the community. Also, I know the community resources very well, so it was just a natural fit for me.
So it sounds like the organization helped you before you got involved.
It's helped me as I volunteer because it became a place where I could succeed, and I'm also a state, and I've been to national trainings, so it's been a great opportunity for me to grow. So I wasn't involved with it beforehand, but as a volunteer, I've been able to do a great deal. So it means a lot to me to be involved with NAMI.
Fantastic. And Marie Marchand is the board chair for the local Whatcom NAMI, mm-hmm. and you may have heard her name before as the former director of the Whatcom Peace and Justice Center. And she and I work together in that capacity, so it's lovely mm-hmm. to see you again.
You too. Thanks for having me on.
Go ahead and tell us about your journey and how you have wound up here.
Sure. With NAMI, and I want to say it's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Some people don't know the acronym. Well, for two reasons I got involved with NAMI. And so the first is because, like you mentioned, I have a nonprofit management background. And so I thought I could bring that to the board, you know, with financial help, with, you know, fiscal oversight, with making sure the programs are connected to the mission. That's really important in nonprofit work. And so it was interesting because I found out that, oh, it's completely different when you are paid for 40 or 50 hours a week and that's all you do, right, with your life, because nonprofit becomes your life. So that's different from being a volunteer where you have, you know, kids or, you know, full-time job. So I don't really get to give as much as I wanted to. So the other reason is because I knew it could be a reciprocal relationship. I knew I could get something from NAMI. And like Laurie, I too live with a mental health condition, and I haven't always been so open about that, but I think it's important to talk about, especially when we're going up against a stigma. Because the number one way that people overcome stigma is when they see somebody that they respect or that they know who's involved in community, they see them doing well. They see them managing it, and they know they have a mental health condition. So that's part of the reason that I got involved, because I wanted to really be engaged, because being kind and being engaged, it never goes wrong.
So, locally here in Whatcom County, what is NAMI doing? What are they providing?
So, NAMI provides support, education, and advocacy. So, we offer support groups for people who live with a mental health condition, and also for loved ones and family members who have someone who lives with a mental health condition. We also have education classes. And one of the nice things about NAMI is we separate it out between the people who live with the condition and the family members, because we can talk more candidly. You know, when someone comes in the room from the other group, we all get quiet. So it's a great sense of support. The other part is advocacy. And people can call our office and get help with different questions. We have people call from around the nation who have a loved one who lives in Bellingham, who's going through a crisis, and they're asking us, can you do anything in this situation? So we talk to them about community resources.
And part of advocacy, I know as an observer, is that you have a state lobby day. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Every year. And the past few years, it's been organized by Corinne Sabrine, who is a person who's really passionate in neuroscience at Western, and she's just passionate about advocacy and changes. And there are things like when Christine Gregoire was governor, NAMI was really invested in mental health parity so that insurance companies would cover mental illnesses like they cover physical illnesses. And one thing that I'm hoping to do is do an educational campaign that encourages private insurance companies that actually are long-term disability companies to cover mental illness and mental health conditions that would cause somebody to deteriorate to the point that they need that. So I know there would be no government interference or regulation, but just to do an education so that they start to change, because these practices are discriminatory still and they contribute to stigma.
Well, what's the spectrum of illnesses that NAMI covers? I mean, there's a great spectrum of sorts and types of mental illness and extremity of mental illness, and I'm just curious about if you can unpack that spectrum for me.
Yes, so I can talk about it from within our program. So like in one support group, we have people who live with ADHD or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, to people who live with schizophrenia. We don't say, well, you have to have this specific diagnosis to be here. It's for anyone who lives with a mental health condition, and we don't ask about diagnoses. We don't ask about any of that. We just say, you're welcome here.
So to anyone, you don't have to self-identify.
You don't have to. No.
Well, it leads me to a related question, and maybe it's super broad, but we all throw around this term mental health, like we all just know what it means. And I don't really know. I mean, in some ways, it seems like, okay, we're all a little bit whack, right? And so, like, how do you even delineate what is mental health? What is a mental health issue?
I guess the DSM, the Diagnostical Statistical Manual, is up to 5, maybe beyond that 5. Okay. And, I mean, really, unfortunately, it's accurate to some degree. I mean, I know when you open up to bipolar disorder, I mean, there I am, and I don't want it to define my life because I have a personality beyond my cycles that I go through. But I think there's, you know, accurate sets of symptoms that contribute to a diagnosis, and then from there you can get treated.
How engaged are mental health professionals in NAMI and hospitals and providers? Are they engaged in the organization?
I would say that in our groups, people are coming to our groups because their mental health providers are telling them about NAMI. I've noticed that frequently, that people go, yeah, my counselor wanted me to come or recommended this program. We don't have many mental health providers we don't have any who are on our board or anything like that, but I see that support from within the community, you know, and they're welcoming of our programs, that they're considered, you know, an augmentation of their services.
And when I first joined the board in 2014, there were providers from the behavioral health unit at the hospital. There was a nurse and a counselor. And I guess that we learned from one of our board members who's been on there a long time that that's historically been the case, because that's the integral provider in our community. So we're actually trying to recruit board members right now, so I want to throw that out to people, especially to providers, and I want to reconnect with the unit at the hospital.
So since you bring it up, what does a board member do? What kinds of things are you looking for? I think a lot of people, especially me, hear, oh, we need board members. And I think, oh, that's got to be somebody who's rich, who can raise a lot of money.
Oh, I see. We don't have any of those people on our board. And,
Is that a good thing?
We would love them, anyone around this table who has money. So that's part of it, is fundraising. I mean, each board should have 100% board giving, and whether that's $25 or $1,000 or whatever you can have, just the 100% giving is valuable to grantors. And so we're looking for board members who like to do some work and to find their niche. So, for example, there's some board members who like to organize events and auction, you know, that type of thing. So that's super helpful. But most of, we get together once a month. We talk about the programs, their signature programs that come down from NAMI National. We want to make sure that they apply to our community. And some of them are evidence-based programs, and so we really want to distribute those.
And what's an evidence-based program?
It's something where the researchers at the national level, that they've determined from their research and others' research that it actually works, that these programs, these ways of managing your illness, that they have been effective in studies. And so they create curriculum around that and pass that to the affiliates around the nation to perform. But in addition, going back to the board, basically it's what I said earlier about being fiscal stewards with what we have, helping develop the budget every year, helping to supervise and support the staff and the volunteers who are directly, you know, like Lori, facilitating the classes and meeting people directly. So the board, we don't really work with people directly unless we also volunteer in that capacity. But we're a fun group, we're committed, and so we want people who are passionate about mental health.
So we talked a little bit about the programs that you guys do. What kind of events do you guys put on?
We put on educational events for the community every quarter or more frequently if we can. We've had some people about early onset psychosis and how to deal with that. We've had people on for mindfulness. They're usually at the Central Library in the evening. We've had people about childhood mental illness. And what other ones can you remember, Lori?
We've had one on motivational interviewing. We've also had it about talking about medications and how they affect people. And the other big event is Stigma Stop. And so that's an event where it's a fundraiser, but it's also an opportunity to say, let's stomp out stigma. Let's end this stigma. And so it's happening October 7th at 10 o'clock. And so we're looking forward to that. And
so that happens every year at October.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's a 5K fun run for kids.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Kids and adults.
I'm glad
and
that you bring up stigma, because when I hear you talking about the stigma stomp, and you're trying to do things to wipe it out, like, that's one of the biggest issues, I think, around this particular issue of mental health. Like, when somebody has diabetes, it doesn't carry the shame. It doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to be ruled out for a job or something like that. And then I also hear, when you're asking for board members, like, is that also something that it's difficult to recruit volunteers because there's this huge stigma around mental health?
There is a huge stigma, and there's, people do not want to identify that they live with a mental illness. So I know that one thing is, I know living with mental illness is that I don't want people to know it. So it has taken years to get to the point of saying that, yes, I live with post-traumatic stress disorder. But then I go, well, what if I interview for a job and someone finds that out? How is that going to impact my job? Would I ask that if I was living with diabetes? You know, that would just be covered by the health insurance. There wouldn't be questions about, can you do your job? You know, there's not those questions. So it does, we kind of joke and say that mental illness is not a casserole illness, because people don't bring casseroles to your house when you're diagnosed with a mental illness.
Okay,
they tend to avoid you.
It's like, where were you going with that? I get it.
That's but when beautiful. Someone has cancer or something, right. People come around and support you and all that. I've lived with cancer, and I was like, why don't they do this with mental illness? You know, support us so much. And so it's also You know, I wonder if it would be easier to be on some other boards that don't deal with such a difficult topic.
I was just talking with somebody who's been recently diagnosed with cancer, and we were talking about the cancer card and how you can use this card. Like, if you don't feel coming to work today, or if you need to get out of a party, oh, I have cancer. And, like, everybody's like, oh, of course. And then, like, there's this whole thing. But you can't say, well, I have schizophrenia, so I can't come to your party, because, like you said, you're not going to get that reaction.
In fact, one of the things is, even among people who live with mental illness, we won't say that we're struggling with mental health symptoms. We'll say, oh, I have the flu. Even among people who are living and who are advocating in this field, we still fall back into that same pattern.
And yet this is such a huge issue for our society at large, and Bellingham particularly, you know, as Bellingham struggles with issues of homelessness, there's a big factor of behavioral health involved in that. Looking at issues related to criminal justice in the jail, again, major issue related to behavioral health as far as that goes. Obviously, NAMI's not big enough to do all this. How do we approach these issues in a way that is helpful to society?
Mm-hmm. I think it takes a community conversation, I mean, constantly, to look at that. Like you say, it's such a big issue. There's so many complexities to it. Going back to stigma for a moment, I think a lot of people think that people with mental illness have character flaws inside them. People don't see it as an illness. And this is part of the community effort and community organizations. We have to understand, and some people with mental illness don't identify it as an illness, but I think looking at it in that kind of pathological term of illness, I think it helps kind of break it down, because it's not, you know, not a character flaw. I mean, it's not our fault, that type of thing. And I think the more we break that stigma down, the more community involvement there will be, and more funding for organizations like NAMI. That's a big thing.
And we're going to get back to our community conversation right after this. You're listening to Cascadia News Now with Marie Marchand and Lori Maxwell, Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham. I'm Stephanie Contours, and we'll be right back.
Community to Community Development is your local grassroots organization led by women, people of color, and farm workers.
Comunidad a Comunidad es su organización local de base, que es liderada por mujeres, personas de color y campesinos.
If you care about the food that you eat and having a fair and sustainable food system, you should partner with us.
Si le importa la comida que comemos y quiere mejorar el sistema alimentario, debería juntarse con nosotros.
You can call us at 360-738-0893, or you can find us on the Facebook.
Puede comunicarse con nosotros por teléfono 360-738-0893 o encontrarnos en nuestra página de Facebook.
You know, Miles, Muddy, and Mongo are gone from this earth, but remain a presence in the present with Hacksaw Jazz.
Jazz and blues from RadioPhoenix.org. This is Full Moon Hacksaw.
Yes, chords and scales, but also lyrics and melody. It's Hacksaw Jazz with you Sundays at 8 and Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham, Washington.
Jazz and blues, Full Moon Hacksaw.
My name's Michael Park, and every week on the International Americana Music Show, I'll be playing a selection of the best Americana music made solely by non-American artists, whether it's alt-country from Australia, newgrass from Norway, or singer-songwriters from South Africa. There'll be music and interviews with Americana artists from a lot of countries that may surprise you. So join me every week for an hour-long musical trip across countries and continents on the International Americana Music Show.
International Americana, Fridays at 8 p.m. and Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on KMRE 102.3 FM. Welcome back to Cascadia News Now. We're having a conversation this afternoon or morning with Marie Marchand and Lori Maxwell, both from NAMI Whatcom. And we were just talking about the importance of having a community conversation about mental health, which is what we're trying to do now. Of course, 1 hour is nowhere near enough, but Marie, we're just talking about that.
Mm-hmm. And Tim, I wanted to go back to something you were talking about. You mentioned homelessness in Bellingham, and while mental illness affects people of all classes, housed and unhoused, it is more visible in our community when people don't have anywhere to go and they're out in the public having symptoms. Nationally, it's reported that 26% of people who are homeless also have a mental illness. I wanted to talk about some of the things that are going on is particular to the city of Bellingham. So, for example, the fire department has the community paramedic program, and that's Captain Jeff Brubaker, and his full-time job now is dedicated to going out. And if he sees anybody in need or he's receiving multiple calls, the fire department's receiving 911 calls from a particular individual over and over, to actually go out to where they are and see what's going on and connect them with relevant services that can help them. And that's been effective at reducing 911 calls. So it's both, you know, to allow the fire department to go out to other emergencies, you know, fire related, but it's also to help people. And then also in the police department, it was just reported at the city council meeting on Monday that they have a new mental health liaison that's contracted through Compass Health. And so they will do a similar thing. If the police encounter somebody who it's clear that they're having mental health symptoms, that they're a danger to themselves or others, that they will call this mental health provider and work through it in that way. So there have been a lot of strides, in my opinion, that the city of Bellingham has been doing.
And we've talked on the show before about the homeless outreach team, and put that on our website, CascadiaNewsNow.com. And so one of the things that I was just speaking with Officer Dante Alexander, who's a neighborhood officer, and we were talking about, and we talked about with Mayor Linville about when would you make that call and when would you use 911 versus the hot team. And if somebody's in danger, whether they're endangering themselves or in a danger to others, then it's a 911 call. But if it's not a 911 call, if somebody's not in danger, that is really what the homeless outreach team is geared for. And I'm really hopeful, because as Tim was talking about, the overlap between homelessness and mental health is really growing. Former King County Committee to End Homelessness member Bill Block said Washington's homeless services have become the default mental health discharge system.
Right. And I had an opportunity to interview the fire department's community paramedic. And it's a great program. Essentially, there are people that just struggle in life, and they have no outlet for their struggle other than to call 911. Some people will call several times a day. And so this program is designed to reach out to those people, to give them some assistance. It reduces the call load on 911, but it also creates, I think, a human connection between government services and people who need them.
I wanted to go back to the topic about the HOT teams, the homeless outreach teams, is that they make a huge difference in this community, because I've seen I know a number of people who are homeless in Bellingham just by the nature of knowing people who live with mental illness. And what happens is they go out in the middle of the night and go and tell people that, you know, we have services available to you. We can provide you services. And then they give them a card and say, come in and you can see us during the hours. They have a program worked out with the police where the police knows that there are certain areas that need to be cleaned out, certain homeless camps. And then what happens is the homeless outreach team goes out first and tells them, you have 1 day to get this area cleaned up, or 1 week, I forget the exact number. And so they're trying to come at it from not just a reactive, like, we have to take down this camp. It's like, let's get you some resources. Let's work with this homelessness outreach center at the Opportunity Council.
Well, tying this in with the conversation about stigma, I totally hear you in the sense that I have from the city and the fire department and the police department and the mayor's department is that, that they are doing their best to not treat the increase of homelessness like a problem or people not like human beings. At the same time, there is a lingering negativity and fear that is increasing in our community. And it's frustrating to me, but I think we'd be amiss if we didn't mention it, that business owners start talking about how it's a problem for them. Or I hear more and more people saying, well, I'm afraid to go downtown. And it's really frustrating to me. But how is that even under NAMI's purview? But what are your suggestions for how do we bring that up?
So I would like to say NAMI has one statistic that a person living with mental illness is twice as likely to be harmed as someone who doesn't have a mental illness. I'm more likely to be in harm's way just because I live with a mental illness. And I would say that downtown, this is just my personal opinion, is that it's just a core number of people who are that are causing a number of problems. And that's just my view. So, but I don't want to speak any more about to it because I don't know more than that.
Well, you're touching on a huge point about people who live with mental illness are the targets of violence mm-hmm. and are sometimes perceived, and it's portrayed in our media that they're the perpetrators of violence. And I think that that's a huge point. It's really important not to gloss that over. Mm-hmm. And it relates to, I just wanted to bring up, I mean, we have had people in our city who have been bullied and harassed and murdered because they were living with mental health issues or that they were more vulnerable because of it. And in March of 2017, Alex Dald in Snohomish County died in police custody. And he was a member of a NAMI team. He was somebody who was involved with NAMI, and he was experiencing a mental health crisis, and his family had called the police. And I'm not saying that accidents don't happen, but holy cow.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, bringing this all together, it's a reminder that for as far as we're coming here in Bellingham, we have a long way to go. You know, not just here, but nationally, there was Mr. Dahl, there was the, you know, the man who was having a crisis and naked and scared in Georgia who was gunned down. There was the guy in Bakersfield where a cop sat on his chest and beat him to death because they were tired of getting 911 calls from him that were nonsense. You know, there was a woman also in California who was beaten by a police officer on the side of the freeway, and the police then tried to get access to her medical records so they could retroactively justify that with a mental health by getting access to her mental health records. It's there's a lot of pressure on that reinforcing that stigma and every time there's a shooting as there was in Spokane, the first thing that comes out of a lot of people's mouths is, oh, this is a mental health problem. And while that may be an element, nothing ever gets done. It just becomes a synonym for this is unsolvable for them.
But I would like to say at the same time, if a synonym for mental health is unsolvable, that's not true because there are a lot of solutions for mental health and that people can have recovery and that, you know, people can live quality lives. So that's very important to remember because there are many people living with mental health issues or mental health concerns who go to work every day and have families and have good lives. And we don't hear about that because they're living their lives, you know. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to remind you that you are listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contours with Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, Marie Marchand, and Lori Maxwell. And Lori are from NAMI Whatcom. And you are listening to KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham and KAVZ 102.5 in Deming and Van Zandt.
I wanted to build on what Lori was saying as connects to the NAMI programs. And the idea of recovery is usually associated with substance use disorder, but there is something that's called mental health recovery, and it's what you were talking about, Lori, with living, you know, a quality life. And part of NAMI's mission is resilience, and that's super important. Mental illness is often a chronic illness, and so that means for many of us it won't go away, but there are some ways of managing it, and treatment teams often set goals with the people. And some of the goals are that the episodes are less intense, they're further apart, and they're shorter. And so personally for me, I mean, those are my goals, to rebound back faster. And there's a lot of brain science out there talking about the brain's ability to reboot itself, to have resilience, to create more cells when 40 years ago we didn't think that. And we're able to rewire our brains. In fact, if we have a moment, this is an interesting story of research, but even when if you're visualizing or meditating on an event that happened, and usually they're talking about a traumatic event, if you visualize it ending in a different way, in a better way, your brain may actually believe that that's how it happened. And traumas can be healed in that way. So the brain is amazing. While I think my illness won't go away, I'm rebounding faster. I participate, you know, fully in life. It's just hard sometimes, a lot of the time, but, you know, I do it. I believe in recovery and resilience.
I do too, because I've been on Social Security disability for 25 years, and I've gone back to work full time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess my only, and I don't want to put anybody on the spot with this question, but you know, mental illness is not a city issue. You find it out in rural areas too, and the county is the primary dispenser of mental health services in Whatcom County. I believe in 2007, voters or the county council passed a 0.1% sales tax for mental illness. And I'm just wondering if anyone has any anecdotal information about county response. We talked a little bit about the city programs. I'm wondering if anyone has any experience or knowledge of it.
Well, the county runs the triage center that's over off Division Street. So it's for behavioral health. And for folks who don't know, that encompasses substance use disorder and mental health. And there was some good news that recently came out that center is going to be doubled in size, because there's only 16 beds right now, 8 for substance use, 8 for mental health. And, you know, that's not enough. The fact that it's going to be doubled is super good news.
Also, the BHAP program, Behavioral Health Access Program, is still being used. People could get short-term, I'm not sure how to describe it here. Do you know what it is about the program?
I know that it's just limited short-term assistance and a little bit of navigating. That's my only familiarity with the program.
Yeah, that program is still available, and that's run through WAHA, the Whatcom Alliance for Health Advancement.
And we get some funding, NAMI does, from the county.
Mm-hmm.
They're very generous with us. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you mentioned the Triage Center. I attended the same meeting you did with reports from the police, and they say that, you know, it's an issue because sometimes they're on a call, and they don't quite know what to do in this particular situation. They can call ahead to the Triage Center. They can see if there's room there, and they can transport them. But the police reported that facility is full far more than 50% of the time. And so to provide more beds is actually a great service, you know, to law enforcement as they're trying to respond to situations as they occur.
I believe that's one of the biggest weaknesses, is that there are not enough hospital beds. This is what happens, is, and this commonly happens, is people they need mental health care, they need to go in the hospital because they're feeling suicidal. And so they're waiting in the emergency room up to 30 hours for a bed. And that bed could be in Vancouver, Washington. So how can somebody, if they end up hospitalized in Vancouver, Washington, how can they have family support while they're there? So it's just, and this is common, this commonly happens. There are 20 beds available at Peace Health in Bellingham, but you know, I don't know how often it is filled, but it's more often full than not.
And this relates to a recent Washington State Supreme Court ruling that previously in our state that psychiatric boarding happened in hospitals that were not geared for it, where people were put into beds that were not in a mental health setting and strapped down because they didn't have room. And the Supreme Court in 2014 said that's not cool. But at the same time, there's still that gap in beds.
Right. And I was just going to observe, based on some of the comments I've heard, that stability is probably one of the most important factors to recovery. And so somebody putting in a very stressful situation where they don't have care or even a bed or even a personal space of their own so they can get stable, that only exacerbates the issue. It's from what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. And especially if hospitals have to discharge to homelessness, for example, bring them to a homeless shelter. And one of the things that I want to do, maybe or maybe not connected to NAMI, but I want to start a house. I even have a name for it, Savannah House. I want to start this as a companion house, a place where people can come as, you know, as a kind of a midway for people to get stabilized. So the doctor would have to make sure from the hospital that this person is safe to come out. It would not be an early release because of Savannah House. But then they'd go to Savannah House and stay for 3 or 4 months. And it doesn't matter what kind of income you have. It could be for anybody because any of us could need stability, like you're saying, Tim.
Yeah, and there's been a movement lately at the state level, and I'm glad you pointed that out, Stephanie. It's not just McCleary and Hearst. The only time Washington State seems to get itself together is when it's sued and forced to. There has been a movement to change the way the state handles care and take Western State Hospital and make it a forensic hospital, which is what they call where they keep people who are also prisoners. And instead distribute people who are not prisoners but need care through community centers around the state that would be closer to where they live, closer to real services, and places where they can find stability and get on their feet. It's currently held up because those facilities are part of the capital budget, which hasn't passed. But there is a bit of movement in that direction.
I don't know that much about the capital budget. It's not my forte, but I do know that in it are record numbers, record budgeting for mental health and homelessness. So that's really good news.
In fact, the triage center you were talking about, the expansion of that is contained within that capital budget. And so I think the city and the county realized that, you know, maybe they'll have to go it alone. But the state said that they would put millions of dollars into that for Bellingham is being held up, over well issues.
Well, let's stick with the state for a minute because we, you know, it's fantastic that Whatcom County gives some money to some programs and has a triage. That's fantastic. But historically, in my understanding, most of mental health funding has come from the state of Washington and has been slowly disappearing. And Marie's shaking her head. You can correct me, but I did want to say that regularly we rank in the top 5 states in the nation with the highest prevalence of mental illness and the bottom 48th in mental health care. And that's usually on a scale of needs versus access to health care and mm-hmm. services. So correct me on
okay.
where I'm wrong.
No. The reason I was shaking my head was because I didn't want you to ask me to talk to that issue.
That's fair.
I know those statistics, though, and I do agree with how, it's an atrocity to have it be that way in our state because our state, I mean, people are at, higher suicide risk during the holidays and then also, in our state. I mean, when there's lack of light, I mean, we need maybe more money than other states.
Absolutely. And that's why we have Dave on the show.
Oh, good.
Among other reasons, he's sort of our wall edge expert. So why don't you give us some insight?
Well, the state has never been super great on mental health care. It was getting a little bit better towards the late 90s, but you know, there were a couple of major economic collapses in the intervening years, and it's not been high enough on anybody's priority list. It's very important to a number of legislators. There are some like Kevin Ranker in the 40th, Lori Jenkins down in Tacoma, who are very good on mental health care and really passionate about it. But you got to convince a whole lot of people, and everybody's fighting over every dollar. And so it's been problematic. There are some areas where our state could make some pretty easy progress right away. Right now, under the Medicaid Act of 1965, I'm going to say live on the radio, specifically prohibits any of their money going to fund somebody's stay in a location that has more than 16 beds. And they did that at the time because they didn't want to be financing big state sanatoriums that were all scary and awful and in living memory of a lot of people at that time. And that was well-intentioned, but it has really limited care options for people. And the federal government has been offering, even under the new administration, waivers to states. If you can make the case that your system will not lead to these giant sanatoriums and you won't be wasting any money. And a couple of states have applied for them. They've become a little easier to get because that also applies to addiction recovery services. And I would really like to see our state start working towards getting on that list.
Yeah, top to bottom, federal, state, local response to this issue is terrible. I think a statistic that is in my mind is that about 70% of the people who are currently in the jail suffer from some kind of mental illness or substance abuse issue, and they're not well served in that environment at all.
And it's an excellent segue, Tim. And gosh, you know, the jail's big again on our ballots and everybody's minds. So I remember Sheriff Elfo saying even a couple of years ago that 26% or so of the people in our county jail had been diagnosed with mental health issues, and that he himself didn't think that people belonged there.
Mm-hmm. At a public meeting of the jail stakeholders work group, I think it was the last one, Sheriff Elfo shared that one of his family members actually has spent time in the jail. And so he has this personal connection to the fact that it's an inhumane place for, you know, inmates and staff people. There's pipes that can be taken off the wall easily that have been used as weapons. It's there before booking restrictions, there were about 12 people in a 4-person room.
So not in your professional capacity, but just as yourself as a person, do you want to weigh in on the jail ballot?
Sure, but I want to reemphasize that this is just my own opinion. It doesn't have to do with where I work or NAMI at all. So I probably have a different opinion. Well, I have a different opinion than most of the people in the community who I usually agree with. So I am for the jail, and that's from a perspective of being a mental health advocate. I believe that the current jail having no beds, except maybe a chair on the other side of the wall of the booking room, which is the most chaotic place, I think that the jail is proposed as its own pod for mental health and substance use with own staff that are qualified and programs. I think that for people who have mental illness and commit crimes, that this jail as proposed will be healthier for them.
Lori?
I don't know if I agree with all that, but from my personal view, once again, not as with NAMI or any other way, I wish that services would be, mental health services were tied to the creation of the jail. that if the jail is going to be built, that there needs to be behavioral health services available. And the other thing is that it be located in Bellingham, because most of the people who are in jail are low income. How are they going to see their loved ones in the middle of, you know, out in the county? How are they going to get there? How are they going to be supportive? When does a person make the most progress when they're in jail? Is when they have loved ones who visit them.
Mm-hmm. And right now, due to booking restrictions, a lot of our inmates are going to Yakima. So that makes it even further away. Mm-hmm.
Well, I have heard so much on all sides of this contentious issue, and I think, Lori, I think you're right. From one of the things that I've heard is that there's not enough funding that's dedicated to mental health issues. On the other hand, there are people who are suffering today, and that's why our community keeps wrestling with this, and I know we're going to talk about that more. You're listening to Cascadia News Now. Our guests are Lori Maxwell and Maureen Marchand. I'm Stephanie Contours with Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham, and we will be right back after this.
Western Washington's people and ecosystems using science, education, advocacy, and action. We have launched a new project called Washington Goes Solar to help homeowners and businesses learn about current incentives for home and business solar arrays. More information is available on this project and others at re-sources.org.
Hi, I'm Chris Heim, inviting you to join me here on KMRE for a global musical adventure in the Global Village. Each week, we explore music from all around the world, from classic recordings to the latest releases, and a wide variety of artists inspired by international sounds. World Music in the Global Village, Saturday nights at 9, here on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, your community, your voice, your station.
You know, Miles, Muddy, and Mongo are gone from this earth, but remain a presence in the present with Hacksaw Jazz.
Jazz and blues from RadioPhoenix.org. This is Full Moon Hacksaw.
Yes, chords and scales, but also lyrics and melody. It's Hacksaw Jazz with you Sundays at 8 and Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham, Washington.
Jazz and blues, Full Moon Hacksaw.
Welcome back to Cascadia News. Now we're having a very deep and many-tentacled conversation about mental health with Marie and Lori from NAMI Whatcom. And because it's a huge issue, it's very difficult to really even cover it in 1 hour. We'll have to have more shows in the future. But we were talking about mental health issues as it relates to the jail and people in the jail. And Marie, I think you had something you wanted to add.
I wanted to say that within the $100 million, which is a really big, it's the biggest investment our county has ever made, within that is money for alternatives to incarceration. And those include ankle bracelets that, because of booking restrictions, Bellingham started a few years ago and it's been remarkable in reducing the number of people in jail. And also what's been going on for quite a while is the mental health court. And that's a beautiful thing. I think it's been something that Commissioner Pete Smiley and Judge Deb Lev have really supported. And it takes a lot of time for the person. But I just wanted to point that out, that there are some, you know, really positive things within that budget.
What is a mental health court?
A mental health court is if somebody... Do you know more about it, Lori? All I know is that if somebody has a mental illness... And it's not related to a felony, right, that wouldn't require immediate incarceration in terms of their danger to other people, that the county is willing to work with them. And then they have to go through pretty intense two years, I believe, of counseling, engagement with other services that they might lack in their lives. Do you know more about that, Lori?
I've been to mental health court. I've seen how it works. It's the only place I've ever seen judges giving high fives. So
wow. So it's an alternative for somebody who's committed something like a misdemeanor, as opposed to just jail being the only alternative.
Yeah, we have several therapeutic courts, and there's other kinds of therapeutic courts you can create. But what distinguishes them is you create a very personal relationship between, you know, the person that is going through this process and the judges. And I think that probably alone creates that stability that's necessary, where there's a personal connection back. And the judges take it very seriously. They are thrilled when people, essentially graduate from, I've only seen it from drug court, but they're usually thrilled. They throw a party for people that have made it through that phase of their life and are moving on to something else. So when you call it a therapeutic court, that's exactly what it is.
Well, that's maybe one of the most hopeful things we've said on the show so far. And I want to talk about that. And Marie, before the show, talked about hope and maybe looking at mental health in a positive light, which is almost completely unheard of in any conversation that we have on a national or regional scale. So talk about that, Marie. What is hopeful and what's positive?
Sure. I also wanted to give out a crisis number. So before I talk about hope, Should I do that? Okay.
Yeah.
So people who are in crisis, of course, they can call 911. They can also call a National Crisis Center, which is Volunteers of America. And they could even send out the crisis prevention and intervention team in Bellingham to wherever you are. And that number is 1-800-584-3578. Again, 1-800-584-3578. And also, people can text 741-741. And that's super important to know, because a lot of teens have this illness.
Right. I just heard about that texting program. And it's so exciting, because I know people in my life that are terrified to make calls. And if you're having an emergent crisis or things just seem overwhelming, I can't even imagine picking up the phone and talking to a stranger. Mm-hmm. And this is so innovative that people can text and actually not just text and get a phone call, but having ongoing text conversation.
Mm-hmm. 741-741. So to get on to hope, I love hope. And it's sometimes hard to, for all of us, right, whether we have a mental illness or not, to grasp hope, to hold on to it. But for me, the reason I joined the board of NAMI, I'll kind of go back to that, is because I had some choices, and I don't want to talk about some. I chose the hope choice. And that was kind of like, let me do this, and I don't feel it right now, but let me get involved, let me give back, let me be kind. I felt like the only option, other than other ones that I don't want to say because they're too painful, was to be kind. And kindness is really important to me. I mean, receiving kindness and giving kindness changes our brains and our hormones, but even witnessing kindness, I just wanted to say that. So kindness is what I chose, and that gives me hope.
And one of the main principles within our groups is we will never give up hope. And that's one of the main things we remember in the group. And one of the most hopeful things I see in the group is finding out that we're not alone. We're not alone in that other people live with similar experiences, and they continue living their lives and continue being a part of a community. And I will tell one story. There was one gentleman who he was in the hospital a lot for 10 years, and then he came to NAMI and started becoming a part of NAMI, and now he's working full-time.
Wow, that's fantastic. I want to go a little bit out on a limb here and say I hear a lot of, or maybe not a lot, because again, the societal focus is on the negatives around mental health. But when I do hear a story like yours, it seems like it's kind of a life channel, like against all odds sort of thing. But I guess I'm curious about how we look at mental health anyway, and how there's this standard of normalizing a specific kind of health, and then everything outside of that is an illness. And I'm wondering if there are different ways of looking at different ways that people approach the world.
Oh, sure. And at the hospital in the behavioral health unit, there's a plaque on the wall with a bunch of people's names who we remember in history that, of course, I can't always remember now, but of people who had mental health issues.
Mozart. Mozart's the standard example.
Abraham Lincoln.
Okay. Well, if you have more names, like, you know.
That's the main one I know. He led our country through a very difficult time while living with severe depression.
Picasso, I think. And then also there's sad ones, and I'm kind of advocating the hospital to take those down, like Emily Dickinson, you know, I mean, because her life ended by suicide. But do you have more?
Well, I was just going to say that you gave out some numbers a while ago for people in crisis. How about for people in hope? Who do they call, and how do they engage? How do they get moving forward?
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, they can call NAMI. Because we have a lot of hope. I mean, we're not sitting there, and I mean, we're sitting there, we're standing there, we're kind of dancing around with events and with joy, and like Lori said, with community. So they can call us at 360-671-4950, and the website is namiwatcom.org.
And we'll get that on our Facebook page on Cascadia News Now, and we will, when we get the show up in a little while, we will get it on our website as well. So we're getting close to the end of the show, and obviously you'll both have to come back on because there's so much more to talk about. But I wanted to give you both a chance to have any last words or anything that you haven't had a chance to say.
I think the one of the biggest keys for me to find in recovery in mental health recovery was to take the focus off the illness and put the focus back on life and find out that life is more about balance, football, working, volunteering. It's about finding out about being a part of a community.
Go ahead.
I can just echo that. I mean, that's exactly my word, you know, being part of the community. It's so important because people get isolated. And, you know, all of us isolate it sometimes, but it can be especially dangerous. So we have to, as they say, you know, fake it till we make it if we're not feeling that way, you know, and then it eventually becomes part of our minds.
I just had one final question. When was that stop again?
It's Saturday, October 7th. And people can register now at our website, namiwatcom.org. And it's a 5K. It's up at Bloedel Donovan Park. We start it there, and it has a mental health fair included.
And I just want to thank you both so much. I think, as we said in the beginning, it's an extremely difficult conversation to talk about, and you both have been so kind and generous with being open with your personal stories as well as your experiences. And I know I speak for all of us when I say we're very honored to have had you on the show. You have been listening to Cascadia News Now and our fantastic guests, Marie Marchand and Lori Maxwell, both from NAMI Whatcom. Please reach out to NAMI Whatcom, get on the board, or get involved in other ways. And also, very honored to share the mic with my co-hosts, as per usual, Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham, as well as our engineer, Devlin Sweeney. And you can find more information and hear repeats of our shows at CascadiaNewsNow.com or find us on the Facebooks. We would love your feedback, so don't be shy. You are listening to Cascadia News Now on KAVZ 102.5 in Deming, Van Zandt, and KMRE 102.3 FM in Bellingham.